Welcome back to Budgeting for Educational Equity, the podcast series produced in partnership between WestEd and CASBO, the California Association of School Business Officials. I'm Jason Willis, and this is part two of our special episode about implementing major new initiatives such as Universal Transitional Kindergarten and Universal Pre-Kindergarten. In part one, we heard a statewide perspective about this historic moment we're in from Sarah Neville Morgan, Deputy Superintendent at the California Department of Education. In part two, we're going to dive into a lot of hands-on, practical advice from a local district perspective with Maria Ceballos, Executive Director of the Early Learning Department at Fresno Unified School District. Maria's been helping to lead the expansion of early learning in her district, and, well, I'll let Maria share more about her background and current role.
So I've been in education for over 20 years, and it really started in the nonprofit organizations. I was there for about 14 years, doing a lot of the interventions. So I work in a nonprofit organization, and we had a lot of programs for students, for families, but focusing on the intervention. So I started seeing a pattern, like, no, this is happening way earlier before children enter school. So that's when I had an opportunity to apply to a position here in Fresno Unified in the early learning department, because I knew that's where the impact was going to be. I knew that I needed to go down to child development. So I started here about 7 years ago. It's going to be 7 years, and I've been in the early learning department. I started as a manager, and I'm currently the executive director for the early learning department in Fresno Unified School District.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that recognition that the outcomes, the trajectory of our kids starts early, I think is, in a very important way, becoming more and more of common knowledge amongst educators. And so that you picked up on that early and headed to early childhood, I think is, you know, obviously been a blessing for Fresno Unified. And so, speaking of the district, just if you could offer a couple of characteristics, you know, for listeners Absolutely. Around the district and the community that you work in.
Yeah, no. So we're very proud of our community. Fresno Unified is the third largest district in the state. We have over 73,000 students, of course, including preschool all the way to 12. We have our English learners, our population is about 17.5%, and our socioeconomic disadvantage is 85% and above. We are the biggest employer in the Central Valley. We have about 12,000 employees in our school district. We have 66 elementary schools, 14 middle schools, 10 high schools, alternative schools, so you name it. But we are the third largest district in the state.
Yeah. And so of those 73,000 kiddos, you know, obviously some portion of them are, you know, in early childhood education. So for your role as yes. the director of VC at Fresno Unified, talk a bit about that landscape. You know, how many children you serve across what number of programs, the types of programs.
Yeah. So in Fresno Unified, we have six child development centers, and those six child development centers serve infant, toddler, and preschool age children. They're year round from 7:30 until 5:30 in the afternoon. Plus, we also have 72 part day preschool programs within our system. We have 108 transitional kindergarten programs. If we include our SPED program, it's 120. So in total, in those programs that I just mentioned, we serve a little bit over 5,000 students.
Maria, when you talk about those 5,000 students, we'll get into this a little bit more in terms of some of the mixed delivery. But how does Fresno Unified work with other partners? You know, because there's likely more than 5,000 kiddos.
Oh, absolutely.
0 to 5 that need to be served. So talk a little bit about the relationship you all have with those partners.
So we have great partnerships in our community, including Fresno County Superintendent of Schools, Resource mm-hmm. and Referral, Head Start. So we actually receive a contract from Head Start to be able to serve Head Start programs within Fresno Unified School District. That started a couple of years ago, and we plan to continue expanding. We also work very closely with Resource and Referral and any other nonprofit organizations to be able to support with professional development. So whatever we develop here internally, we share it with our community partners.
Got it. Awesome. And you were starting to get into this a little bit earlier, Maria, but talk about kind of why early learning is so important. And in particular, in the context of Fresno and how it's had an impact on students.
Yeah. So as we all know, 90% of the child's brain development happens before the age of five. So how we see this in our community is that there's a sense of urgency. This is a critical time. And then also, it's also an opportunity for our community to be able to serve children at a very young age. We know that the children that come into the programs, and it doesn't have to be just within Fresno Unified, but if a child attends a high quality program, we tend to see better outcomes as they progress in the upper grades.
And from the perspective of thinking about ensuring that, you know, that access, that opportunity is created for those students to achieve that outcome that you just mentioned, how does Fresno Unified define equity and apply it to the work you all are doing in early learning?
So what we want to make sure that we do is that children have access to a program. And it's not just a program, but we want to make sure that it's a high quality program that regardless wherever the child or the family decides to enroll their children in one of our many preschool programs, that they are going to receive high quality services. And we're able to do this. It's not easy, but we're able to do it through that commitment, not only of our board, but our superintendent. And Nelson. They continue to be committed to expanding the early learning programs and to be able to allocate the right resources to create high quality programs.
So part of what I'm hearing you say there, Maria, is that what's important is making sure that you create such a level state and a high state of quality across all the programs, regardless of where a parent and their child like walk into a early learning center or a different care environment, that they're getting access to a level of quality that, you know, that is going to help them achieve that outcome. So as you like reflect on the community of Fresno, what kind of systematic barriers do you see, you know, what would be your like your top three systematic barriers that you see in the EC environment?
So as you mentioned earlier, we serve about 5,000 of the children of preschool and TK age, but we know that there's a lot more children out in our community. So some of the barriers is really getting this information in the hands of our families, being able to, for our families to have a better understanding of the importance of enrolling their child in one of the programs or to send their child to a play and learn group. I think one of them is providing that information, and it's more than, so we have an ongoing full communication outreach to our communities. So we use television, radio, social media, messages to the home. But the one that we have seen that really creates that impact, it's that connection with the families. So one of the things that we have noticed, yes, we can send a flyer, we can be on television, but if it's not in the language of the family, and if it's not in a way that they're able to understand it, you're just going to see it as anything else that you're seeing on television. So we were fully dedicated to let's get out in the community at every community event that we can get ourselves to and be able to create that connection. We know that if we're able to create that connection right away, our families would tend to begin to build that trust. Like, oh, you're telling me that you offer this. What would it look like? Like, you have to be able to speak our family's language. We have to be able to address some of their concern or some of their barriers that they might have. For example, some of our families might come to the enrollment center or at a community event, and they're telling us, oh, but it says here that I need the birth certificate of my child. You know, we would think like every single parent has a birth certificate of their child. That's not the case. So then for them to be able to share that with us, it's something private. And at the same time, it's not just like, oh, you're going to need to go and do this and that in order to get the birth certificate. No, we link them to the appropriate supports. And we keep track of it. It's not just like, oh, call this number or go and do this. We're going to follow up with the family to ensure that the family is getting all those required documents so it does not become a barrier of whether or not the child enrolls into our program.
I want to shift gears a little bit, talk about some of the major initiatives, one of which you had brought up earlier around those 108 PK classrooms, 127 if you include the special education environments. And I just want to go back a couple of years and go back to that moment when, you know, you found out for the first time that the state budget had included this ambitious goal around implementing universal transitional kindergarten. And like, what were your thoughts? Like, what was going through your mind, you know, being in Fresno and, you know, given the context of what Fresno had done up to that point?
Yeah, no. So as soon as we heard about it, I mean, I was on the phone with Matilda right away. Like, this is so exciting. And we both felt like that. And a lot of people in our community felt like that. Like, this is very exciting for our community. This is a great opportunity for our family, for our children. I think we were a little bit nervous, but never felt like, oh, we're not going to be able to do it about the actual implementation. I think we were just waiting for those guidelines and more specifics about what does it really mean for us. So, one, we were excited, but at the same time, we're a little bit nervous about the implementation. And then strategically, let's begin to think about what would it look like, who's going to need to be at the table, how are we going to get this done? We knew from the beginning that it wasn't going to be a responsibility of just early learning to be able to carry out that expansion, but it was going to be a commitment over a whole system. So even before mm-hmm. it happened back in July 21, 22, we started with our formal work of bringing different departments together. We brought early learning. We were the lead. We brought the fiscal department, facilities, human resource, teacher development, special education, supervisors of schools, you name it. And we needed somebody at the table that was that decision maker. A lot at the beginning, it was understanding as the why. Why are early learning programs important? Why do we need them in our system? And then as soon as people understood us of the why, then it was more about how are we going to figure this out?
So I am curious to know, especially from, you know, whether, you know, you label it as universal transitional kindergarten or universal preschool or pre-kindergarten, that Maria, you all had been in the process of building and having some of these building blocks in place in Fresno. And so if you could talk a little bit about, you know, when you saw this opportunity come forward where you felt like there was some momentum that was already building, but other areas that maybe you were starting from square one and things that you needed to kind of catch up in the construction of this.
Yeah. So one of the things about our system is that we never actually give it like a UTK expansion or anything like that. We just call it early learning expansion because it's not only our TK classrooms that are expanding, it's our preschool programs, it's our child development centers. So there was this whole idea about how do we continue to expand our early learning programs. We knew from the beginning, and that was a commitment of the board and our superintendent, that as we were going to have more TK classrooms happening in the next couple of years, one of the commitments was that we were not going to eliminate any of the preschool programs or any of the child development centers to be able to make room. Instead, we were going to figure out how do we continue to expand. So some of the things that were already happening here locally was a whole idea about expanding and how do we get our families to this type of programming. And it wasn't just us. I mean, it's across our community. We have Fresno County Superintendent of Schools, Matilda, as the lead that was really guiding us. And you know, she's a great grant writer, always willing to support any of the agencies. Like, you want to be able to do this? Let's figure it out.
And we've heard this name, Matilda, come up a few times. And I personally know Matilda, but for our listeners, can you say a little bit more about who she is, this person we keep referring to, and what her role is?
Yeah. I just know her as Matilda. Matilda Soria, she's the Senior Director of Early Care and Education in Office of Fresno County Superintendent of Schools. So she supports not only us here in Fresno Unified, but she supports all the school district in our county when it comes to early care and education.
Yeah, I mean, I think that from the perspective of somebody like Matilda at the County Office of Education, to be in that position of being able to provide direct support to a service provider such as yourself can be a really powerful asset. So that seems like that probably is like one of the key factors that really has been contributing towards implementing TK. Like, what else would you lift up if there were one or two other things that you would identify as being like crucial factors in helping with the implementation of TK?
I think it's very concrete strategies. It wasn't something that was just like a theory that we were going to try to figure out. It was very concrete what we were trying to accomplish. And I feel when you bring a group of people to something very concrete, we're more likely to be successful. And if everybody is engaged and is committed to, yes, we're going to accomplish this, I think that's huge. Being very concrete and being able to have the right people at the table.
So, and dig a little bit deeper. When you say concrete, like give us some examples of like what that looked like, what some of the conversations were like.
So some of the conversations that we were having, very specific to Fresno Unified, and then I'll give you an example of our community. So very specific to Fresno Unified is like, okay, our projections show that we're going to need to expand to this number of classrooms. So everybody knew. So fiscal knew, okay, what does that look like in funding? Facilities knew, like we're asking, how does that look like in classroom availability? Purchasing knew, like what would that look like in our classroom baseline? So everybody had like that end goal, but then it was going to be very specific for each one of the department, what was going to be their contribution. So that's kind of like very concrete what we were going after. When it comes to the community, we have had many partnerships with Head Start, Resource and Referral, Fresno County Superintendent of Schools, where we have had experience in working in similar projects to this. So one of the things that we had worked on for a couple of years is supporting our dual language learners. So we started at this, organizations came together. We identified that there was an issue, which was how do we continue to support our young dual language learners? So we identified that professional development needed to be done around supporting our young dual language learners. So we started a couple of years ago with a small pilot. All the organizations came together. We brought our educators. They went through a training. The training was successful. We implemented very specific strategies. And then we took that to now let's develop a toolkit that others can use in our community and outside of our community. But it was very concrete, which was how do we support our dual language learners? And then the strategies that we took in the professional development, we were able to implement it and then offer it to others to be able to use.
So on this point, I'm really curious because I think that, you know, as you had previewed earlier on in the interview, about the kind of the community of Fresno Unified, you have a large proportion of the students in that community that are Hispanic and in particular are English language learners, dual language learners. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to have you maybe push in a little bit further on the design of this professional learning because that isn't something that's necessarily really common right now within the state of California. That is that the preparation of early childhood education providers would incorporate professional learning and build the capabilities of providing dual language learner instruction. So can you like unpack that a little bit more? Like what is it like for a teacher to go through that?
So this is specific supporting our dual language learners. It all started with the Starting Smart and Strong initiative that was funded by the Lucio and Packer Foundation. So they came to our community. We brought a group of people and they allow us to identify what was the concern that we had in the early grades. And one of them was about that all these organizations, we agreed that one of the areas that we wanted to be able to address was how to better support or how to better equipped our teachers to be able to support our young dual language learners. So out of that, we started doing some research. We had, and then we found that there was some strategies that had been developed by Dr. Linda Espilosa, Elizabeth Magruder, Carola Olsen, and they were called personalized oral language learning that were very specific to be able to support our young dual language learners. And they have three areas. They had the instruction, they had the environment, and they had the family engagement. So we're all very excited. There's a book all about it. So we started implementing those strategies to now where we have we had built a toolkit that not only us are using this professional development approach to be able to support our young dual language learners, but it's across our state. And I'd be more than happy to send you information about it. But it all started with the organizations coming together and identifying it.
Got it. Yeah, no, I think it'd be great to have those materials to include as a part of the show notes, for sure. And so we're a couple years on here, and you know, you have had a chance to kind of see the UTK programs develop and mature. What are some of the like leading indicators that you've seen in the implementation of UTK that are giving you promise and giving you kind of an opportunity to look ahead positively to the future?
So our first year, it was a lot of unknown, and we all agree as part of what we call the large group and the smaller group. So the large group will come, they were the decision makers within the district, and we'll come monthly to review and to share information and talk about the next steps. And then we have the smaller groups, which it was actually working directly with the different departments like, for example, on funding, like how are we going to figure this out on facilities, that type of thing. So some of the things that are very promising is that it was very much unknown. Like, this is going to be our baseline for the rest of the years as we continue with the expansion. And I can say that successfully, we were able to implement 37 additional TK classrooms. This year, our projection showed that we were going to have about 500 children coming in because of the expansion of the age eligibility, and all the children showed up. So we were very excited to be able to see that, because it's kind of like you're using preliminary projections. You're not sure if they're going to show up or not, and they all showed up. So, you know, we were very excited to see that children are in our community. We already knew that. We were not sure if they were going to show up, even with all our efforts of our communication plan and getting out there in that community and letting our families know. But our children in our community are ready, and they're showing up. It's all a matter of our school districts ready to receive and serve all our families and children.
Yeah, yeah. And so the flip side of that, Maria, is really around the challenge side, right? And you know, I'm picking up on a sense of a little bit of hesitancy, or like, you know, excited nervousness of like if the students are going to show up. But when you think about the kind of challenges that you've encountered around that expansion, what would you say your kind of biggest system challenge has been to date?
You know, as I think back about what happened this year, I mean, it's only been a couple of months, but just being ready to pivot and have the flexibility. Like, for example, we were expecting that we were going to have an additional classroom in school A, but wait a minute, the children didn't show in school A, they actually showed up in school B. So being able to pivot very quickly within like a week, days, to be able to transfer all the classroom baseline to the new site. So I think it was more of being flexible that things might not come out as you expect them to be. And we just have to be able to pivot immediately. I mean, our families deserve it. I always tell the people that it's not about us. It's about the children that we're serving in our family. So we would just have to make it happen and make it work.
Did you have any kind of like routines in place when you did need to pivot? Like, were there things that helped you like move from like, okay, we may have been expecting this, but now this is going to happen? Were there any things that kind of helped you move from that?
Yeah. So we were keeping a watch very closely on the numbers that were showing up. Like daily, we were keeping track of that. We were also in ongoing, constant communication with facilities, with warehouse, with anybody that was going to need to come in and make that all of that movement happen. An ongoing communication with our administrators. So there was just so many pieces that were moving at the same time. But I felt that we had built that relationship, so everybody understood the why, and everybody was prepared that this was our first year, and there might be some things that we're going to pivot at the last minute, and everybody was okay with it, or so I think, because I never heard any type of pushback or no, we're going to do it. I mean, everybody had signed up that this was going to happen.
So So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk a bit about the kind of other key partners that you have engaged in this effort. And, you know, when I say that, I'm referring really to parents or other educators or other community-based organizations, and just interested to hear from you as you've been, you know, engaged in this journey and implementing the planning, the decision-making that comes around it. What have been some of the like effective ways that you found to include their voice and their decision-making in those processes?
So we have had many opportunities where we can actually get to connect with our community partners and ask for feedback. One of the venues that we had been able to do that is through a local planning council at the county level, and where we had been able to get feedback. We're able to partner with resource and referral. So one of the things and one of the commitments that we have within our community is that, and we have always said it, like, children don't just have to be served through Fresno Unified School District. There's many other organizations. If I could tell you a story, our executive officer, one day she was on the news and she was talking about advertising like the programs and talking about enrollment. She forgot to mention Fresno Unified. She mentioned all the other organizations outside, but she never mentioned us. So I feel that we do have a very solid commitment within our community that children don't have to be served just by us, but they can be served. And it's what's going to be the better fit for our families. That's what we always have to keep in mind. Some of the families might come to us and say, like, that doesn't work for me because of my schedule or this and that. But then we're able to connect them to resource and referral, where they're able to guide them to some other potential programs.
Well, yeah. And what I think you're getting there is in terms of like how you were engaging them in effective ways. And like one of the things I was hearing from one of those partner organizations is they were doing like a fair amount of cross promotion. Like if they're out there talking with a media outlet or the general news media, you know, part of what I'm hearing is that they were representing this as a united front. Like this wasn't any single player. This wasn't any single entity, but you all were doing this together to like enforce, create a much more effective early childhood ecosystem in Fresno.
And I can tell you, like, for example, we're part of the local planning council. I have never felt, and I talk to other school districts, other partners that are leading the early learning programs. And for us, we come in very comfortable to be able to have a conversation. There hasn't been that... but I think it's also the facilitator. Like, I mean, I'm talking about Matilda, being able to facilitate those conversations that our community partners haven't seen, like the school district as the enemy that is going to take all the children. But it's more of, okay, they're supporting it, but at the same time, you know, their programs continue to move forward as well. I have never felt like not wanted, like, I don't know how to say it, like, not wanted in those settings, given that we are the largest district and we do serve a lot of the children. But Matilda will always say, there's plenty of children in our community. We don't have to worry about competing of who's going to serve who. There's plenty of... So I think it takes somebody at that level that brings all these organizations together to be able to send that type of message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like a message of... It's almost like that kind of message allays fears that might be sitting right below the surface of adults that otherwise may not be wanting to say it out loud because it might be embarrassing or it might be, you know, out of nervousness. And so that kind of foresight by a leader to be able to understand and know that and how to bring people around in a positive way seems like it was a really big part of some of the solutioning that you all were doing moving forward. Mm-hmm. So one of the other things that I know about Fresno, and I had mentioned this earlier about the P5 network, is that it really aims to like bring together other sector partners. That is, you know, folks from public health or social services or other nonprofits that are working on efforts that are building a more robust ecosystem for parents, guardians of children 0 to 5. And I'm just curious to like pull up a couple of those in terms of where your connections as a school system, maybe this would be through Matilda at the county, with other governmental entities like public health. So if you have any examples that you would put on the table as being some of the more mature relationships that you've been able to broker as a result of the efforts in early childhood?
So we have locally, and we are an active participant of the Help Me Grow initiative. Okay. And that has been going on for a couple of years. And then you do see different organizations or entities that serve our families and children that come together. So I'm able to sit at that table. I'm able to collaborate with our partners around the Help Me Grow initiative. But there's other, and I might not be the best person to ask, but I know like our superintendent sits at different tables where those conversations are taking place about how do we go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, for our listeners, like, give us a little bit of an explanation about what the Help Me Grow initiative is.
Yeah. So the Help Me Grow initiative, it's a system initiative. Like, how do we ensure, like, for example, that our families have access to one call line if they have concerns about their child's development or their growth, that they can call in and ask for support, and then somebody is able to direct them to the appropriate supports and services. Another one is to making sure that our children have the developmental screeners done at a very young age, that we don't wait until the children are actually enrolled in any type of formal program. And that's when we identify, like, wait, there are some concerns about this child. We want to make sure that those things are addressed early on. And it's not only preschools, but it's the pediatricians. It's really a partnership that needs to be able to come together. So we have Help Me Grow that leads those pieces. And it's not the direct services, but it's being able to bring a system, putting a system in place to be able to address those needs.
So UTK is obviously a statewide initiative, and we know Fresno is not the only district implementing it. And of course, every district has its unique circumstances. But all that being said, are there some keys to the success that Fresno has had so far that you maybe would lift up for others to consider?
Yeah, so I will start with saying that for programs to be successful, it needs to be the language that the whole district speak. So I can give you an example, like our superintendent has been talking in his communication to the public about preschool and TK should not be seen as an optional grade in our community. He wants to make sure that that our young children have an opportunity to enroll in a high quality program. And you hear that from our superintendent, and now you started to hear from everybody. So if there's already that commitment at that level, it just makes my job a little bit easier. And in the sense that I know that they're fully committed to making sure that it does take place, that they will do whatever it takes, meaning that funding will be allocated. Additional funding will be allocated because, as you know, some of the contracts that we have, especially around preschool, it's getting better. It's getting better, but we still need that a little bit additional support. But we always know that I can rely on my district for that. So if I can say anything to other districts is if your superintendent and your board are all on board about making early learning a priority, that's already a win. You're halfway there.
And obviously the part of the state's commitment is ongoing funding. They're providing ADA for the students that are attending under TK, but they've also supplied quite a number of one-time resources for this effort. Yes. And I do know that there's, you know, nervousness in the field around what's going to happen once those one-time resources go away. And just curious if you could talk a little bit, Maria, about your experiences in Fresno and how you and your partners have managed those conversations and the future use of those funds.
Yeah. So we knew that, you know, some of this funding is only like a one-time type of thing. Like we have the planning funding. So we're like, what's going to be the best usage of this funding? And so our TK classrooms, the TK classroom baseline used to be around $12,000. We knew that was not going to be enough as we are going to be seeing a lot more four-year-olds coming into the classrooms. We wanted to make sure that the classrooms were developmentally appropriate. So that means that the furniture needed to be different, the setup needed to be different, the environment needed to enhance the learning that the children are receiving there. So we went from like $12,000 per classroom to close to $40,000. So we used that funding and we decided to do that because, of course, we want to make sure that it's appropriately for the child, for the four-year-olds that are coming into the TK classrooms. And one of the things that we just didn't want to do it for the additional TK classrooms that we were opening. We wanted to go back and do a refresh on all our previous classrooms. So that one-time funding was very helpful. It also had a little bit of flexibility of how the funding could be used. So we were able to use it directly to refresh, to give the best environment in the existing and the new TK classrooms.
And also, Maria, you may have made some people's eyes widen when you mentioned the district's spending increase per classroom from about $12,000 to $40,000.
Yes, yes. But we wanted to make sure, and it took, again, I think you had a question in there about like send us back to, you know, those conversations that were happening in the room. And I do remember very clearly, it was with that. So we have a classroom baseline committee that comes together monthly. So it's purchasing, it's fiscal, it's multiple departments that come together. And that's where we present our baseline. So it was going item by item and being able to justify it as a, why am I switching this to this? But there was, and also it gave us the opportunity to talk about how the preschool and TK classrooms environment are going to look different than what you will see in a first, second grade classroom. And why was that need? That, yes, it is going to be a little bit more expensive, but the classroom environment is like the third teacher in the class.
Yeah, and I think that just to pick up on that point, that, you know, going from 12 to 40,000 is, you know, nearly 150% increase in those costs. And certainly the one-time funds help with that. Can you unpack a bit of, you know, any of maybe the resistance or the, you know, if there was any consideration for going with such a large amount of money to invest in a classroom and how you navigated those conversations and how you got folks to consensus?
Yeah. So, and, you know, it was very valid concerns. Like some of the concern is like, what happens in the later years? Because we do have to do a refresh. We know that not everything in the classroom is going to stay new. And that's not the expectation because we want children to be able to use everything that that is in the classroom. So there has been those type of concerns, but also there has been that commitment that if we are going to open classrooms, they have to be developmentally appropriate. And that where I continue to throw it out there in every single setting that we should expect that our preschool and our TK classroom, they should look different than what you see in a first, second, and third grade class. And the importance of having it appropriately designed to be able to fit the needs of the children. So there has been, and I can tell you, like from those meetings, constant meetings and going item by item and explaining what is the purpose, it wasn't easy. But at the end of the day, we knew what we wanted to be able to accomplish. And there was a better understanding in our system about it as well.
Before we wrap up, Maria, we've already shared a lot of great advice for colleagues in other districts. But is there anything else you'd like to, you know, put out in the world when it comes to launching and implementing new initiatives?
I think one is planning. One key one is put a plan in place. The second one is bring the right people to the table. When I say the right people, it's like bring those decision makers that you're going to get a decision out of that meeting. And it's not going to go back to 10 emails or 20 emails later and you're still trying to figure out. So it's a planning, bringing the right people to the table. And also to see this as an opportunity for our community and not to forget to always bring it back to, yes, we can disagree. I can disagree with another department, but always bring it back to why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And the reason that we're doing it's so crucial. Our children deserve to be in high quality classrooms at a very early age. We have that opportunity to be able to give that to our children, our families. So just always, when you get into those sticky situations, always bring it back to why we're here. which is to be able to serve our young children and families.
Yeah, that's great. And what about the state? I mean, they're a little bit further away. They're certainly farther up the food chain. You are doing this work on the ground. What would you lift up as one or two things that you would say to state policymakers, to state agencies, state administrators, about what they could be doing to further support school systems, their partners, that in particular are advancing equity for you all?
I think one is to continue to stay connected to what's happening in the ground. I feel that sometimes decisions get made, but one decision is going to trickle a lot of other things within our system. So always being connected to what's happening in the ground to allow us to give us opportunity to be transparent, to let them know what's working and what's not working. Reach out to us. We can let them know what's working, what's not working, and also that what might work for a big district might not work for a smaller district, and vice versa. So yes, we're all school districts, but we have a very unique communities that we serve, and we need to be able to address the needs of our communities. So to also take that in consideration. Like, for example, I was talking earlier to a group of people about or teachers or workforce. I can say, like, for example, we have a teacher development department, we have HR. So all those departments that work with me to ensure that we get the qualified staff, that's not the same for a small district or rural district here. It's like one person running all those different departments. So all those factors need to be considered.
Yeah, no, I appreciate in particular thinking about the ability for, you know, how much time and attention we can give to all the different facets of these different operations. And, you know, your mention of workforce, you know, also, you know, kind of prompted another question, which is, you know, really around how you've been able to manage the rapid expansion of staff.
Yeah.
Especially with expanding classrooms. And, you know, I think it's a well-known fact that we continue to struggle in the early childhood and K-12 sectors around identifying highly qualified staff to step into these positions. And just curious to hear a little bit of your thoughts about how you've been able to navigate that, those challenges in Fresno.
So as I mentioned earlier, we knew this was coming. So there had been, we have a whole department that works on teacher development. There's very specific pathways to get our teachers into a TK classroom. So we were ready for that. We also have our whole HR department that was able to do some great recruitment. Actually, some of our preschool teachers went into TK. But there was a pathway for them to be able to access. Luckily, we already have that in place, and that continues to grow. Like, for example, for the upcoming school year, we have another pathway. So right now we have potentially three pathways for our TK teachers. One is them this year being the second person in the classroom as they finish their multi-subject credential. The other one is they used to be preschool teachers. Now they're TK teachers in the classroom. So in partnership with teacher development, we've been able to create those pathways to ensure that as of this point, we have not had any issues. And hopefully we'll continue like that in regards to staffing our classrooms appropriately.
Well, Maria, we are so grateful to you for sharing about the work Fresno Unified School District has been doing and your experiences.
It's been a learning experience. It's also been exciting, and at some points we've been a little bit nervous, but always with the expectation that we're going to get it right. It might not be the first year, but the second year is going to be better. And as we continue to do our work, we hope that our preliminary projections is that by the end of the UPK, we will have an additional 100 TK classrooms in our community. So that's very exciting to be able to see our children coming in. And another advice that I would do when things get very difficult and you can't figure out, like, oh, what am I going to do with this? Go to a classroom, go to a preschool classroom, go to a TK classroom, and all the ideas start coming to you. So I always see that as my happy place to go when things get a little bit tough. Like, I'm going to go and visit the classrooms and I'm going to go and see the amazing work that is happening. And then I can come back to my desk and be like, this is why we're doing this.
It's a beautiful way to close, Maria. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you come away from this special two-part episode with some practical tips for implementing new initiatives, plus a better understanding of the multifacets of early education, universal transitional kindergarten, and universal pre-kindergarten. A big thanks again to Maria and Sarah for sharing their stories and insights. Budgeting for Educational Equity is a partnership between WestEd and CASBO. Paul Richmond writes and produces the episodes along with me. Alyssa Perez at WestEd provides research and develops our companion briefs. Tommy Dunbar handles our music, sound, and editing. This series is also made possible by the generous support of the Sobrato Family Foundation. I'm Jason Willis. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you out there.
And I did listen to a few of your podcasts the other day, and I was like, oh, I'm using that quote.